Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting across from Kitty Flanagan. And we're here to talk about bridge burning and other hobbies, which is what? Memoir? List of funny stories? What is this book, Kitty?
Yeah, see, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I didn't want it to be an autobiography, because could there be a more boring story than my life? But some funny things have happened to me in my life, so I wanted to write some true stories. So they're autobiographical stories, but it's not an autobiography.
But we can analyse it and try to get to the heart of you, right?
Yeah, I guess. And also, you've got to remember, when I tell these stories, they're just my version of the story. What I should have done was actually get everybody else's version of the story too. It's just my opinion, because I'd like to hear what other people thought of the same event and how I, yeah.
Dennis Lilly did that with his book, and it didn't go well.
No, yeah, well, it also seemed like a lot of hard work going around going, how do you remember this? Because I remember it like that.
I remember you being a real...
Yeah, so...
No, you could have... It's balanced. I mean, it's not the ABC. You're publishing it not through the ABC, so you don't need balance.
I know, and I did try and be balanced. I think I can't help that ABC side of me. So I did actually try and say, well, and I'm sure they would have seen it this way. So I did try and give someone else's point of view.
So... I was looking through the great source of information about everyone, Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And running through all the truths that are listed there.
I hate Wikipedia, and I don't know who writes that page, and I've been trying to get it shut down for ages. Whoever it is, I've been locked out of my own Wikipedia page, and I know more about me than that Wikipedia person, but I'm not allowed to change it. She just writes rubbish.
You should have one link to this book, buy this book, and that's
so
it.
So annoying, yes, I should. It should just be a link to the book.
So what can I believe there? Did you go to Western Australia?
Yes, well, that's in the book, so I actually, okay. I wrote about that.
So, advertising?
Yes, I was in advertising. Okay. No, I wasn't good at advertising, though. Let's make that clear. I thought I was at the time, but now I look back on it and I was terrible. I was appalling. I was lucky to have a job.
Because your dad was in advertising for some time?
Yes, dad was in advertising, and I just always thought that was, like, it was a really fun job. Mm. But I think, like a lot of advertising people, I was in there wanting to make the ads about me and my creativity, and I've realised now that that's not really the best way to sell a product. Mm. Like, funny ads don't necessarily work. You go, that's a funny ad, what's it about? I can't remember. Well, then that's a really terrible ad, isn't it? And so I used to try and write ads like that that were funny and would entertain people, but, the client would say, but my product's not in it. I was like, well, this is about me trying to win an award and do some humour, so could we not bother about your product? So I realised I was in the wrong game.
And so It seems to me that the whole comedy thing, I mean, just kind of, I mean, you had it in you, right?
Yeah.
But then you just got up on stage one day.
Like, yeah, it was a bit of an accident. No, well, I think it has to be. I think that's all you can do, really. And I was only going to try it once. I just wanted to get it out of my system and think, well, I won't get to 40 and wonder, oh, what would have happened if I'd... So I just thought I'd do it once and I'd be terrible at it and then I would know. And I did it once and it just happened to go really well. And so I went, oh my God, I've got to do it again. It's the most addictive thing you'll ever do. Getting a laugh for the first time on a stage is just absolutely addictive. It's, better than any drug. I haven't taken a lot of drugs, but it's better than any. Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, that leads me to a chapter which I found interesting. Your conversations with an ex-partner who was a bit of a stoner. So there's a bit of, like that. It's difficult with these kind of memoirs. And as you said before, you haven't given them time to sort of rebut the things that happened. But you are talking, it is your life, right? And it's kind of ownership of that, right? You can say, this happened in my life and I can write about it.
Yeah, even though you're my version.
Yeah, it's your version.
Yeah.
So these guys that you had relationships with and you're writing about in the book, do they have any notion that this book is out there that...
No, I've tried to be fair and only pick people who are in other countries, and so probably because I was lucky. I lived in London for 10 years, so there's a few people that, look, good luck to me. If the book goes well in London, I'm in trouble. But I'm also, the book goes well in London, good for me. So it's win-win, really.
And do you reckon that those things, the stoner won't remember, but the other guys?
He'll have no idea. Yeah. Did I go out with you? I've got no idea.
Did you feel, with those kinds of things, when you do it on stage, you will be quite revealing about your past on stage. When you were writing this, was there a limit? You sort of went, I can go this far and no further, or is there?
Yes. I had to be careful because certain people have already been pilloried on stage enough, and I just thought, come on, draw the line. leave that person out of it. You know, even though I had a couple more good stories, I thought that person suffered enough, so they get a free pass and they don't get to be in the book. Lucky them. And then there's another person in there who I have been dying to say something about, and I've held on to this for a long time, and my anger really poured out in that chapter, and I really let him have it.
And is that if that person does go, because unfortunately when someone writes a memoir, it's anyone who's ever walked in their life at all will go grab it just to flick through and see their name.
Yeah, I've wondered about that.
It happens. Yeah. And if you've got an index, it makes it even easier. They don't have to buy the book.
But well, I didn't name anyone. Yeah. No one is named in the book.
Yeah, but there is a section of blokes.
There is.
They run on, so they can go straight to the section of blokes and start reading
through. Yeah, they can
it.
Go to, relationships that went wrong and find themselves. It's a massive part of the book. No, it's not that big.
The square ham. This book has... so many things which I relate to, and cause I think we're only a couple of years apart, I think, and so a lot of things in the 90s that you refer
right,
to.
Right, yes.
I'm just going, I know that, I know.
You know the references.
Yeah, I know the references, and it'll just come flooding back, because some things in the 90s you just don't want to come flooding back, thanks, Kitty. And there it came straight back, and I'm now having therapy. But, how hard was it to actually bring all that back? I mean, my memory is absolutely shot, especially for the 90s period.
I know, it was quite interesting doing that, thinking, oh God, that happened and that happened. Like, it's amazing to be forced to sit down and go, what are the most interesting bits of my life? And for the first few months, I sat there going, I haven't got anything. I've got nothing. Nothing interesting has happened to me at all. And then, slowly sort of I used to go up to Waverley Library every day. And write up there. And once I sort of got the hang of it, then it started to be, oh God, oh, what about this person? What about that person? But then I just had to make sure I tempered it, going, well, that person probably thought you were an asshole as well. Like, it's always, you're not just some golden girl that's, was swanning through life going, oh, I'm amazing and everyone's really terrible around me. Like, I'm sure I was giving as good as I got. And I try to give that in the book and sort of say, look, I didn't like her, but I'm pretty sure she didn't like me either.
You haven't gone as far as Molly Meldrum, but you are quite balanced. Molly Meldrum, in his book, it seemed like he was the butt of everything he said. When I interviewed him, I said, are you going to sue yourself? Because that is terrible. I can't believe you revealed that about yourself.
Yeah, no, I just try and show a bit, like, I just want people to know that I am self-aware. Like, I do feel like that's one of my only saving graces, is that I'm self-aware. Like, I can behave in a really poor manner, but I'm very aware of it very soon after, so I will always apologise. I don't, continue on with the behaviour and go, I'm right. I go, oh, God, I was horribly wrong. Oh, Jesus, how embarrassing. I should go and point that out and say I'm sorry. So,
with stand-up, do you get off stage? Are there times when... Because there's bits that just happen that don't happen in other shows, or is it all regimen? Does your show sometimes just have ad-lib to come out of nowhere?
Yeah, obviously, according to whatever audience and whatever town I'm in. And, but the bulk of the show, the main part of the show, is always the same. And it has to be because, it evolves as I go around. But essentially it has to stay sort of the same, because otherwise when you get back to a town the next time, you think, oh, what have I done here? What if I haven't? So you literally have to write a show, take a show, do it, and there'll be extra bits that each audience gets, but they get the main stuff that's all the same, and then at the end of the tour you have to burn the show and start again, because you can't be going around to the same towns going, oh, did I do this bit last time, did I tell you this joke before, did I tell you this story? So you need to know what you've done and where you've been.
And do you have a sounding board, or do you have the audience as your sounding board?
Absolutely the audience. I mean, that's what's been the hardest thing about writing a book, is not having the feedback immediately. And I do feel sorry for anyone who picks up my book if I'm around, because I will watch you reading it and then go, what are you laughing at? What's that?
What's that bit?
Yeah, are you finding that funny? What is it? What page are you on? What page? Which bit's funny? Like, I'm so desperate to know that which bits are funny, because I'm so used to being able to get up on stage and talk and go, okay, well, get rid of that. That's not funny. Get rid of that. Oh, keep that. That was a good bit. So it's been really weird writing a book. And, I did sit opposite someone who read the whole book in front of me with me watching. Which bit do you like? I know, it's such pressure as well.
I remember in the distant past, I mean, people like Dickens and Samuel Richardson, they would sit and read the chapters to family and just see the reactions. If it's going well, then go, oh, that's good.
That's the best idea. Yeah. That is such a good idea.
That would have been why you're doing it, just making sure they're all doing exactly all those kind of expressions you wanted right in front of you. You could have.
I could have tried it out on stage, I guess. But the problem for me then would have been anything that was funny I would have wanted to keep for my stand-up set. And I wanted to make sure that the book was stuff that I had never done on stage before, that it's all completely different, because I have done so many shows and they're all out on DVD. And so people have seen a lot of my stuff. So I wanted to make sure that the book was
different. But also, you're not always, like, it's not every line you're going after laughs. It's not like bang, bang, bang. Like, you just,
no. And that was actually the most difficult thing for me to overcome. And my sister was very helpful there. She was a very good editor for me, because she was one of the first people that read it.
She's the one who put the line in, the awesomest sister in the world. Was that the...
good editor. She really is the most awesome sister in the world. But she read through my stuff and she said, look, it's really funny. She said, but sometimes you just got to get your clown out of the way, mate. She said, it's getting in the way of the story. You're too busy trying to put joke, joke, joke. She said, get rid of some of that stuff and just tell me the story. She said, the stories are good, so just back off with your bloody jokey jokes. They're starting to annoy me. So that was a really good tip to go through and go, okay, it doesn't have to be funny every line. It can just be a good story with, you know, that is amusing on the way through.
One thing that I remember reading Clive James' Unreliable Memoirs, and at the end, he had this knack of, at the end of each chapter, doing a funny. So you just jumped over that little space between chapters to get, and then you got no funnies. And all the way through, and then at the end of the chapter, he gave you a funny, and he went, oh, I'll go to the next chapter.
Yeah, great.
So he really evened out his funnies. He didn't waste them. He
goes, pace your funnies.
Yeah, pace your funnies. He's like, I've got 13 chapters, that's 13 funnies, I can do that. So now that you've got the book out there, mm-hmm. I mean, Beyond Sister, your father's read it, you know.
Yeah, my dad's read it, my mum's read it, a couple of friends have read it.
How's
all
that?
In front of me. All in front of me.
With a laugh of meter going.
Yeah.
So how is that? Because this is you on page, handing it over, and
yeah,
your version
weird.
Of it as well. Because I've got four brothers and sisters, and I will tell a story, and they'll just look at me and go, well, that's just a load of shit. You made all that up. Nothing like that happened.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. You can only ever write your version of it. So it was great that my mum read it. Because I wasn't sure whether she would like it or not, and that was terrific when I sent her a copy and she pretty much read it in a day, and you know, was just sending me texts saying, oh, I'm loving this bit, I'm loving that bit, and it made my day that my mum liked it. Because I'm always so nervous about my mum coming to see my stand-up, and I know she doesn't like it when I swear on stage, and I do swear on stage, so it was nice to actually be able to write a book, and there was not that much swearing in it, and she really enjoyed it, and that made my day.
How long have you been swearing on stage?
About 25 years now.
She still hasn't got used to the whole swearing on stage.
No, she just, well, look, I think she thinks what I do is very good and very funny, but it would just be just as funny without the swearing. All her friends come and see my shows, and they, you know, they're all 70-year-old women that don't walk off, and they don't go up to a golf and go, oh my god, she swears a bit, doesn't she? No one has ever said that.
Her.
Yeah, no one's ever said that to her, so I don't know why she gets so funny about it. But yeah, it was great that she read the book and laughed, and yeah, and even my dad, because they know what I like, they know what I need. I'm very needy. Dad texted me while Mum was reading it and said, it's really annoying, your mother keeps laughing out loud reading your book. And I was like, yay, that's the review I want. I'm so desperate, I'm so needy, I need to know people are laughing.
And that need, I mean, you've got a memoir out there, people are going to analyse you. I mean, that's what
I know.
We do, right? That need, you comfortable with that? Is that just you, that's my life, I'm going to have that the rest of my time? That's what drives my comedy, that's what drives my career.
Well, it's kind of good in a way. It's good that you get to write it the way you write it. Like, whenever I get asked to do, you know, interviews in the press, it's always really difficult because I think, well, I want to write it the way I want to write it. Like, I'm going to tell it to you, but then you'll interpret it a different way and maybe you won't get the nuance or it'll come across badly on the page. I'm such a control freak like that. Like, I want it to be the way I said it,
mm-hmm.
and only I can write it that way. So it's actually been really good to be able to write a book and get that control freakness out of the way and say, well, this is my version and this is the version I like.
If you're going to do excerpts, just that whole bit. Don't introduce it, don't conclude. Nothing.
Yeah,
just...
I know. Even one of the bits that was like taken as an excerpt, I had to ring up and say, oh, can you put one of my jokes back in? It's just a bit of a boring story because you took the joke out at the top and now it's like, oh, here's an earnest story for the first paragraph. So just give me one joke back. I said, and then I'll let it go. I said, I promise, just one joke. Give me one joke back.
You're chasing journalists all around Australia now.
I know. I'm terrible.
Comments. I'm going to look, any article that's on, I'm going to look at the first comment online and see if it's you.
No, I never do that. But yeah, I am. But like I said, I'm self-aware. I know I'm terrible. So.
When writing it, did you discover stuff that, I mean, because you have to look at yourself and you have to be quite, as you said, self-aware. Mm. But, you know, often we're not as honest as we might be and taking time to write. Writing is slow and it's annoying and you rewrite and you try and get the thing exactly right, which means you're going over the thought 5,000 times and examining exactly, is that really the truth about what I did and what I thought? Is there anything doing it, even though you've got a made a career of kind of examining life and it's from an odd angle? Was there anything in creating this book that actually came up and you went, oh, I've got to change that?
I think that's what's interesting with the written word as well, is you do need to be far more careful. Like when I'm talking on stage, I can say something and then very quickly to the audience go, oh God, I'm kidding. You know, or just give a look and people know that you're making a joke about it or you're not serious. But it was very difficult on the page to make sure it didn't come across as just, nah, 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 I don't like this person, I don't like that person, because that's how it can read. And when you go back over it, you go, oh God, that's not how I meant it to be. So it was actually a really good exercise in kind of
balance. It's like email. It's like you're emailing the whole country with the story and they've got to try and work out exactly what you meant by that sentence. Did that have a wink at it at the end of it?
Arj Barker has the best joke. He says that there should be a sarcasm font that we can all use. And that's ideal. I don't know why someone hasn't invented that yet.
Because, I mean, you're so expressive on stage. Your face just shows so much and you're able to manipulate the words by your expressions. Yeah. And that just, unless you're actually sitting there reading it alongside and then doing the facial expressions.
I know, unless I'm reading it for you. Yeah, so that was, but I really enjoyed that too. It was a completely different way of expressing myself, and I really enjoyed that.
We need an audio visual book, so not just an audio book, but an audio visual book with you reading it with the facial expressions.
I'll be able to do it now. An audio book will cover it, I reckon. I can do it just with my voice.
We're going to miss the facial expressions. They're worth it.
Just some photos to go along with it.
So I want to talk a little about your career. So there's kind of bits and pieces that you went to the UK. You're in. UK Comedy Skits, you were here with Full Frontal, which was, you know, the big one.
It's a sketch show for anyone too young to remember it. When I say Full Frontal, it does sound like I was in some nudie show.
Yeah, she was in a nudie show called Full Frontal. and that was massive within the Australian context. And then now you're with the Weekly with Kitty Flanagan. Right.
I believe it's called The Weekly with Charlie Pickering.
Right, that's right. There's another guy in there. These kind of things, are these things areas that you like doing, or is it the stand-up and getting in front of the crowd and touring that is the main game for you? What is the writing? Is the writing the main game?
I'm incredibly lucky that I get to do it all. My one problem is that I'm not a good multitasker, and so it was difficult. I couldn't start writing the book until I'd finished on the Weekly for the year, because I can't be writing two different styles. They're very different styles to be writing, news-based stuff that you're performing live to air, you know, and also we do little sketches on that, and so writing sketches that you then get to film and edit and craft and finish was a very different thing to writing a book, and I literally couldn't get my head in two spaces. The only thing I can manage to do at the same time as anything else is stand up, because I've been doing it for so long, I'm so familiar with it, and you know, I'm so comfortable with what my voice is on stage. I can do that and one other thing, but that's the limit of my multitasking. But I love doing the stand up. I hope, you know, I'm smart enough to never give it up, because I think the minute you give it up, you're losing that instant thing of what is funny and what isn't, and it's just such a good sounding board to be able to go out every night. And even some nights you'll go out and you go, this is usually funny, why isn't it tonight, what have I done wrong? And it's great to always be on your toes like that. We had a gig recently, I did 12 shows in Sydney and they went so well and I was on a complete high. And sorry, when I say we, my sister's in my show as well, and I also have another support act, so I'm not talking in the royal sense of we. When I say we were on stage, like there are actually more than just, it's more than just me. But we did these 12 shows in Sydney. They were fantastic. And then we went to Adelaide and we had 12 shows lined up there. And the first show we sort of came out and Julia Gillard was in the audience. And I'm such a massive fan of Julia Gillard. I even mentioned it in the book. And she'd come to the show and I was beside myself and I thought, oh God, I just, you know, I so want this to go well because she's here and she was going to come backstage afterwards. And we just had the most ordinary show we'd had in a long time. The show was fine, but I don't know what happened. You know, there were little things that we looked at afterwards where there was no music in the foyer, so people sort of arrived and it was a bit like a church. Mm-hmm. And then people went into the theatre and it was, I think it was, you know, they call it Tight Ass Tuesday at the festival. So there were a lot of pensioners in, mm-hmm. you know, having yeah. bought their cheap tickets. So it was a very low-key vibe, and we didn't address that at the beginning. I just sort of came out and started doing the show as normal and then started to think, I've got to get this, I've got to pick this up, what am I going to do? And all this is going on in your head, but it'll never be clear to me why that wasn't a great show, because I felt like I was doing my performance, and anyone who was there would say, yeah, it was great, but for me it wasn't. And the next night we went out and absolutely, you know, kicked it in the dick, as you say. But it was to use my favourite expression. And it was great. But yeah, I just will always remember Julia Gillard coming back and thanking me for my hospitality and thinking, yeah, it's not really the review I wanted. I wanted her to come back and say, hey, you really kicked that in the dick, not thank you for your hospitality. It's just, you know, it's kind of, yeah, it was a shame. It was, yeah, my least favourite show in a long time, and she had to be at that one.
And so when you're doing things like Utopia, are you able to do the shows at the same time? Or you?
Yeah, well, I was doing Utopia at the same time as I was doing The Weekly. And that's difficult just because of time constraints and going from one to the other.
Are you
and
creatively also, involved in Utopia?
No, absolutely not. God, I could never take credit for that show. It's brilliant. but it's a lot of learning the lines, and you have to... You know, I said a lot of stuff that I didn't understand and I had to say it at speed.
So brilliant.
And yeah, it's amazing. Like the stuff that was coming out of my mouth, I couldn't tell you what I said. But you really do, knowing what those guys are like and the way they direct it and the way they want it done, you know you have to be on your game and turn up and know your lines. You can't be fishing around for it. Like I can on Charlie, you know, it's stuff that I've written, and if I kind of am reaching and trying to remember it, that's fine. But you can't do that on Utopia. You have to know exactly what you're doing when you walk out there. So that was a bit of pressure doing the two things at once.
My sister works for government and she feels like there's always someone over her shoulder going, writing all the things she says down so they can be in that show. It was just
so many people say that to me. Yeah. So many people come up and say, oh my God, we've got a Rhonda in our office.
Yeah.
And if you don't say that, you're probably the Rhonda. That's what I like to tell people. We don't have a Rhonda. That means you're the Rhonda. So.
Kitty, it's been such a delight talking to you. I mean, I have a habit of going over time.
I know, sorry, I'm a bit of a babbler.
No, I'm a bit of a babbler when I get all the great stuff you've done and you've got in your book. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you, what a pleasure. Such fun.
You can get hold of Kitty's book at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.